Hey guys, this is Chris GST. Just a pre-show note. I wanted to apologize for some of the audio quality on the show. Dez Del Dio, he was in transit, but we wanted to talk some wrestling, get some of his thoughts on the show. Dez, though, being the perfectionist that he is, he wanted to apologize for some of the quality. Of course, we will return back to our normal recording abilities next week, but we just wanted to mention that. Thanks again, and enjoy the show. Welcome back to PWPonderings.com weekly newscast. It's been a long time since you've heard us. Of course, I'm Chris Gisty. I'm the web admin, keeping everything going on the website. As always, I am joined by Dez Delgadillo. Dez, it's been a long time, buddy.
It's been a while, Chris. How about that Undertaker?
Yeah, how about that?
The streak. I can't tell you how many times over the last week non-wrestling people who I guess know that I am a fan of wrestling have come up to me and have asked me that question. So how about that Undertaker? And I think, well, how about that Undertaker? He lost, you know, and it really hurt me at first, but he lost. And it's weird to me that they know that I'm a wrestling fan, even though I don't remember ever expressing to these random strangers that I like professional wrestling. So that either means one or two things. They follow my career much more than I know, or this Undertaker losing thing has become the next big thing that CNN is covering because God knows they need something new to cover, and Ultimate Warrior is not that new thing.
No, the Ultimate Warrior is definitely not something CNN needs to cover more than it already has. Yeah, no, I had friends come out of the woodwork, people who I didn't even realize. I knew they were past wrestling fans, and some of them I didn't even realize knew that I liked it. And they're like, dude, I heard Undertaker lost to Brock Lesnar. I'm like, one, how do you know about the streak? I mean, I assume they knew about Brock Lesnar from UFC, and then it's big news, man. It's definitely made its dent. We'll just have to see what happens. It's kind of crazy. But I will say, obviously, some sad news, the passing of Ultimate Warrior. Yeah. You know, that news is obviously that dropped everywhere. And, you know, I think a lot of people have expressed their thoughts, so I don't think we can share anything more than other than my sorrow. I mean, I was a big Ultimate Warrior fan as a kid. When I started watching 92, I believe he was making his first comeback to the WWF, maybe technically second, because, you know, he's been on and off with them. But he was a big part of that. Dez, you know, you're younger than me, you know, there's no bones about it. But clearly, I know you've expressed some thoughts on Ultimate Warrior on your own podcast. So what are some of your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I started watching wrestling like, got a lot longer, you know, like 10 years ago, and Ultimate Warrior was obviously no longer part of the wrestling business at that time. And even then, like, I went through my cousin's old VHS tapes because they recorded, thankfully, they went through a phase where they recorded everything that they watched on TV for some weird reason. But it benefited me, so I got to watch all the Ultimate Warrior stuff. And as a 10-year-old who really was kind of a shy person and who didn't really, you know, had a little bit of trouble talking to people and stuff, and who kind of felt a little different than most people, I really identified with Ultimate Warrior because he was just so out of this world different, but he was proud of it and people loved him for it. And it was one of those things that, like, as a child, you really identify with that. And so knowing that he was gone so early, it was a shock. It hurt. But I wrote a blog about this on my website, and I said that, you know, there's a thing about it where he was a real superhero. And somebody tweeted that when we expect superheroes to live forever, and when they don't, as people, we feel the most vulnerable. So when Warrior passed and when that news came out, I think I was surprised and sad, but I think I also felt vulnerable that we lost somebody who was part of our youth, our golden years as a childhood.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming you didn't tell people you were from parts unknown or anything like that, but
or another planet.
Hey, but if you came here from a spaceship, Dez, more power to you. I don't know why you came to the Earth, but, you know, that's your choice. But yeah, of course, a very sad passing, and all thoughts and prayers to the family of Warrior. I mean, it's just It's sad. It is what it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, obviously, some other big events, WrestleMania, WWE Live, Ring of Honor, everything under the sun in wrestling happened roughly in the last 2 weeks. We have podcasts up. If you're listening to this, then hopefully you've already listened to them. But if you haven't, go and check them out. They're on pwponderings.com. Everything we could cover, we did, except for Ring of Honor, Supercard of Honor, which just recently dropped on VOD, and we're actually recording that podcast very soon as well. But right now, Dez, Ring of Honor, firing on all cylinders, headed towards May. They have a couple shows left this weekend, the Future of Honor coming up on the 18th, and then Second to None on the 19th. Before we run down those cards, I wanted to ask you about this. It was speculated in the Wrestling Observer that AJ Styles, he has signed with New Japan for a year. He's going to be facing their champion Okada on May 3rd, and I believe that will be on iPay-Per-View on Ustream. You know, the match that Elgin defeated Kevin Steen for is supposed to be an IWGP title match. I don't know if that status has changed. I just watched Flying High, and they still referred to it as Elgin won a title shot. So he didn't technically win a match to face Okada. He's just going to face the champion. And Elgin, he's been tweeting a lot, you know, that a match with Okada is kind of a dream match for him. So New Japan knows that they have AJ Styles for a year, and obviously the big show's coming up in May with the, you know, Worlds Collide and Global Wars. Do you think something could happen? Do you think a title change could actually happen? I know you don't always get to follow the New Japan product, but I think you follow closely enough to know that Okada, I mean, he's been a great champion, probably one of the best wrestlers in the world right now.
Yeah.
What do you think could happen with this? Is Elgin's dream match in jeopardy?
You know, if they have Okada lose a title to AJ Styles, which I think is very unlikely, seeing as it's his first time challenging Okada for the title, unless they want to, like, be super surprising and shock people. But I don't see New Japan as a company that is out to shock people in the end. I think, you know, if Okada loses, could they potentially do Okada and, or I'm sorry, AJ and Elgin again in Ring of Honor? I don't know if the dates match up or if the stars would align for that, but after the way they finished the first match that they had in Ring of Honor in February or whenever they taped that, they did finish it in a way that said we could at some point do a rematch. So I think this would be that would be a really cool way to do it if they ended up.
Well, they're actually doing the rematch this weekend.
Really?
Yeah, on the 19th at Second to None, they announced it, and the winner gets a future Ring of Honor title shot. So it's kind of weird. If this happens and AJ Styles wins the title, this would actually be match number 3.
And so then it could be like a Ring of Honor New Japan double titled thing, which would be really confusing and weird.
Yeah, it would be. It'd be like, we're facing AJ Styles for the IWGP title, but it's AJ Styles. I don't know.
And for the Ring of Honor world title, somehow.
It would be awkward. Well, they would win a future ROH title shot. I wouldn't see Elgin winning the title before their next match. I mean, if they did, that'd be wonky. That'd be... let's not get into the booking right now. I think Jerome and I and Ari are going to be talking about that enough on the future podcast of Honor.
Okay.
But yeah, okay, so, and I agree with you. I don't really see the dream match being in jeopardy, but you never know. I agree that also New Japan, not really the promotion that does those shock value things. I mean, even when there is a shock, there's reason behind it. You kind of understand why it would happen. And in this instance, I don't see why. The Bullet Club is still strong. There's really no reason for AJ Styles to be champion right now.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get into the, obviously, we mentioned the Future of Honor. All this information you can check out, by the way, pwponderings.com. Just going to run down some of the top matches that's going on. That takes place on the 18th in Newville, Pennsylvania. Adam Cole, he's facing Delirious. And it says it's for the Ring of Honor World Championship. Dez, I'm not predicting a title change there, but you never know. Weirder things have happened.
You never know.
Hey, I predicted Jay Briscoe winning, and it happened. So leave it at that. The Briscoes, by the way, they're teaming up to face Team Benchmark. The Ring of Honor World TV Champion and a Proving Ground match, Jay Lethal, is going up against Jay Diesel. That's going to be fun. Mandy Leon is taking on Jenny Rose. Congo versus Psycho Mike. And I'm going to say All Ego versus Zizou Madu, if I'm not saying that wrong. My bad. Brutal Burgers against Stokely Hathaway and Quinn Moose, the former NFL player who many people have seen in the WBEN Live universe. He's getting a shot. And then, Dez, I also want to talk to you about this last match because it sent some waves, you know, throughout the indie wrestling community. Tim Donst, he's going to take part of a six-man tag team match, but it's Tim Donst in Ring of Honor. And it's, I mean, yes, it's kind of that weird, this is a tryout type situation, but I mean, Dez, it's Tim Donst. I could not imagine Ring of Honor passing this up.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people, both in Ring of Honor and also who just follow professional wrestling are stoked about that. And I know Tim Donst is happy about that. And I love Donst. I watched him in AIW. I watched him in Chikara, and I've always thought he'd be a lot of fun to watch in Ring of Honor. So I don't, has he like done any sort of enhancement stuff for Ring of Honor in the past, or is this his first time?
I believe, and I could be wrong on this, I believe he's been backstage at a couple shows.
Okay.
I don't know if he's done like any type of like dark match stuff like that. That's not coming to me right now. I don't think so. I could be wrong, but I don't think so. But I know, I'm pretty sure I remember saying that like Donst has been backstage at shows before.
Okay.
Okay. So then on the 19th, as we said, second to none, Elgin versus Styles 2. It's a 12th anniversary weekend rematch, and the winner gets a future ROH title shot. And then in Defy or Deny, Adam Cole versus Mark Briscoe versus Jimmy Jacobs versus Matt Taven. Of course, that means if Cole pins any of those men, they do not ever get a title shot as long as he is champion.
Yeah.
And then a Charm City street fight. Imagine that. Kevin Steen and Cliff Compton against Outlaw Inc. ACH versus Roderick Strong. Jay Briscoe versus Michael Bennett. Red Dragon versus Cedric Alexander and Andrew Everett. And then BJ Whitmer and Adam Page against Hanson and Rowe. So that's going to be kind of fun. And then they did mention in this past news release that Truth Martini and the new Ring of Honor World TV champion Jay Lethal, they're going to speak about their alliance this Saturday in Baltimore. So we're going to find out why. You know, I think obviously coming out of Supercard of Honor, that was a big question in everyone's mind. Why Jay Lethal would join Truth Martini? Why would he need to be part of the House of Truth? Do you have any theories on that? Because that's kind of weird because, you know, it's Truth Martini and Jay Lethal.
I'm just so upset that they beat Tommaso Ciampa for the title. So I know he won it like a final battle, so it technically was like almost 4 months, but it still felt like way too soon in Ring of Honor land because Tommaso Ciampa, like he came in and he had such a dominant win, and then they were trying to present him as such a dominant champion. And I think they could have gotten a long reign out of it. And then they just kind of beat him. And I don't know what he's going to be now because he's obviously been pointed out like to be like a vulnerable guy so he can be beaten now, obviously, although it was through shenanigans of the Truth Martini variety. But anyway, it was like they didn't turn Jay Lethal to be a part of the decade, and they went out of the way to not do that. And then they turned him to be a part of the House of Truth.
Yeah, I mean, Jay Lethal, he'd had visual pinfalls over Ciampa in the past. So, I mean, even then, while it seemed like parts of the Ring of Honor booking was booking Ciampa strong, you still had Jay Lethal basically being one up on him, except, you know, through some means he wouldn't win the title. And now he finally has, and it's kind of like, where does that leave Ciampa? I don't know. It's weird. I'm not saying it's bad booking just yet, but I do think it's a little odd. Okay, so let's move on from Ring of Honor to CZW. They had their best of the best. You can find out all the results back on PWFinals.com. Drake Younger, he won. He faced Biff Busick in the finals. He defeated him. He got a trophy. He had a great send-off speech. And you know what? Drake Younger, he's going to WWE. And hopefully I'll be seeing him in one of his last matches out here in Sacramento for a local promotion. But Dez, you know, best of the best. There were some good matches, some not. Hopefully I'll be reviewing that for PWP. But what are your thoughts on Drake Younger? I mean, you know, was this a fitting farewell for him? Because he's very associated with CZW. But do you think this win kind of, you know, a good send-off? Or was it kind of interesting that they didn't pick someone else to win?
There couldn't be a better send-off. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that the finals were Drake and Biff Busick, right?
Yes. Hopefully I said that correct.
Yeah, I think you did. I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think that's an excellent way to do it. You have Drake win. But you have Biff Busick there in the main event of it or the finals of it, which I don't believe Biff Busick has been associated with the CZW main event scene. And if he has, not very long. So I think just the ability to put him there and have him be a part of the awesome Drake Younger send-off, which he so richly deserves. And I fully predict next year we're going to see Biff either again in the finals of the tournament or winning the tournament, because he's had a really good year over the last year, just in terms of the people he's gotten to wrestle and the high-profile stuff that has gone his way. And I think this year is going to be even better for him. And I think we're going to see the Star Destroyer have a much bigger part in the next year in terms of card placement and where he belongs on the wrestling scene.
Yeah, he's actually kind of already being rewarded for it as he's facing the CZW World Heavyweight Champion Drew Gulak Sunday, April 27th. Before we get into that card, though, some little news there. Kevin Steen showed up as a surprise, maybe not surprising some, given there was some Twitter battling going on with DJ Hyde in the weeks leading up to this. So he attacked DJ Hyde at Best of the Best, and he hit him with two package pile drivers. So Kevin Steen in CZW, this could be a lot of fun. You know, I think CZW obviously a little bit more lax than Ring of Honor, and with the way Kevin Steen is, hey, you never know, right?
You never know.
So as we mentioned, To Infinity occurs at FET Music in Providence, Rhode Island, Sunday, April 27th. Drew Gulak versus Biff Busick. Shane Strickland, he defends his title against Joe Gacy. The Beaver Boys defend their tag titles against number one contenders that were crowned, The Juicy Product, Masada versus Chris Dickinson, and more. There's more news, as always, at PWP. Dez, let's get into some Dreamwave news. Lince Dorado, he won the Dreamwave Wrestling Alternative Championship in a three-way that also included Reed Bentley and Rich Swann. You know, I don't know if you've been, you know, following as many results as I have, but over this past weekend, I mean, Lince Dorado, you know, he's been winning titles. He's picking up wins in a lot of places. I would say he's probably best known for his Chikara time, but I think he's really making wave on his own, you know, right now. What do you think about him? I don't know how many matches you've seen him in, but I've always been not impressed, quote unquote, and that's nothing against him. I'm just saying that, you know, I think he's a really great hand. He does a lot of obviously the high flashy moves, but now it kind of feels like he's stepping into his own as opposed to being, oh yeah, he's that Chikara guy.
Are you talking about Lince Dorado?
Yes.
I remember watching him. I want to say long ago, but it was like a year ago when he wasn't involved and he was being a part of like all these four-way freestyles and frays or whatever they call them and involved all these multi-man matches that were just kind of randomly there that open up a card. And I thought he was really cool in those because he had stuff to do and they always gave him like a really good spot. But I haven't really watched much of him recently, and I don't remember ever watching him do one-on-one stuff, so I'm not too familiar with what he's done lately, but I just remember him really shining in the multi-man matches that he had. But I don't know if in a one-on-one, if he's a really competent high flyer or if it's just like the occasional spot he can do, the way Samurai Del Sol was just awesome at high flying.
Yeah, I mean, there's those unique characters in wrestling, and sometimes they, you know, they're very similar in style, stuff like that. So I could see that, you know, whereas if you weren't watching Lince Dorado, you were probably seeing Samurai Del Sol. So we'll see what Lince Dorado does going forward. In AIW news, two new entrants into the J-Lit and one exiting, Marion Fontaine and Eddie Kingston. They have entered the 2014 J-Lit. Johnny Gargano, he's the one being replaced by Eddie Kingston due to a PWG commitment. So he will not be at night one, but he will be there on night two in non-tournament action. Dez, I'm pretty sure this is still exciting. I mean, Marion Fontaine, you've talked to him many times.
Yeah.
I would assume you've never talked to Eddie Kingston. Maybe out of fear, I would be included in that. So, but still. Big names for the J-Lit.
Yeah, I'm terrified of Eddie Kingston. But yeah, there's some cool names for the J-Lit. The J-Lit is always this grand event, and AIW are consciously trying to make it a bigger event every year. I mean, this year they even have, like, you can stay at a J-Lit hotel sponsoring the promotion and stuff, and they have Buff Bagwell there, and they even have a J-Lit after party this year that you can go to. So they're trying to make this, like, their... kind of like their WrestleMania weekend with all the parties that are going to be happening.
Man, I kind of wish you could go. That'd be awesome.
Wouldn't that be awesome? Me at partying with John Thorne. That's a goal of mine, is the party with John Thorne.
And Buff Bagwell. Man,
Yes.
you cannot underestimate that. Speaking of promotions, out of Ohio, I got to speak with Joe Dombrowski, and he recorded some stuff. He has a lot of projects coming out, the most recent one being a documentary about Zach Gowen. So I got to sit down and talk with him. Let's go to that real quick, and then we'll come back. Joining me on the line right now, he's a friend to pwponderings.com, and he has tons of projects. Joe Dombrowski, how are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing very well, a little bit lethargic after a very, very busy 2 weeks traipsing around the United States. But as always, happy to be here and appreciate you guys taking time out of your schedule to talk to me.
Joe, always a pleasure. I mean, I'm assuming you're in a busy time. Were you in New Orleans? Is that what you were trotting about?
I absolutely was. I was in New Orleans for WrestleMania weekend at WrestleCon and the Mid-South Legends Convention, spreading the word on my new projects, and of course selling a cornucopia of wrestling merchandise and collectibles and memorabilia. And this past weekend was, of course, IWC's big annual Night of Superstars, featuring Bret Hart, the Steiner Brothers, AJ Styles, Matt Stryker, many others. Had a 16 and a half hour day with that show, and traveling a little bit throughout PA with my brother Gregory Iron, spreading the word of my projects and his story as well. And now I'm back here in the office and just awaiting the next challenge, whenever that may come.
Absolutely. Well, we're always looking forward to those DVDs. Ryan Rozanski, I think, does a very good job of reviewing IWC for the
He
website.
doesn't mention my name as much as he should, but
That's
that's
true.
a years long battle. If I'm a fan, I would like to know if the commentary's good or bad, if I'm decent, if I'm awesome, if I suck. I'll let the audience decide which I fall into. I think the audience would want to know that I've had guys like Mark Madden and Matt Stryker and Colin Delaney and the IWC champion Dalton Castle and assorted other people sitting in with me. Could be a selling point, but what do I know? I've only been doing this 11 years.
I would say that's because you are a true professional, sir. And of course, us at PWP, we're amateurs. I make no bones
No,
about
no, no,
it.
no, no, no. It's that just, you have that one anchor tied to you. I met you guys last year at WrestleCon. You guys do good work. Just, sometimes you need to know how to run the ship and slap some people around a little bit.
Absolutely. I mean, we've all seen the hashtag cancel Ryan going about on Twitter. We'll do something about it.
There you go. He's the worst thing since Nancy Grace, I gotta say.
Wow. I don't know what to say to that. Let's follow up on this, though. You're talking about riding around with Gregory Iron, another man you have a new documentary out about, Zach Gowen. The trailer was released very recently. You can go to pwponderings.com right now and check out that trailer. But you know what? I mean, Joe, clearly this man has, I want to call it a miracle, but I feel like even that is kind of not giving it the credit it's due. I mean, to me, I haven't seen the documentary yet, but just knowing his story, obviously most people probably know him from WWE and his I don't know, good or and or bad, depending on how you see it, storyline with a certain masked wrestler who may or may not still be involved with wrestling. And it just, how did you get involved with this? I mean, because obviously it, to me, to someone like me who my father's a doctor, my sister's also in the medical field. Stories like this to me are touching. And it seems like, and I could be wrong, but this kind of seems like the first documentary about Zach Gowen. So how did you get involved? What kind of spurned your interest in getting this out to the public?
I first saw Zach Gowen wrestle back when he had done his debut with TNA in 2003, even before WWE. And from the very first second, I was hooked on his story. I was mesmerized by his athleticism. I had a chance to meet him about 8 or 9 months later. And thanks to he and I both being a little bit immature, excess baggage, socially awkward, it didn't exactly go so well. But in the years ahead, I had the privilege of working with Zach more regularly, befriending Zach. And once Zach had gone through WWE-sponsored drug rehab 4 years ago, I really had a chance to know the real Zach Gowen, a clean and healthy and focused Zach Gowen. And to see how positive and full of life this man is after everything he's gone through, after his father bailing on him at age four, from getting cancer at age eight and losing a leg, from the social awkwardness and inadequacy he felt about himself throughout his teen years and into his early adulthood, to having his dream come true in WWE only to have it taken away from him 9 months later, to coping with it with just excessively dangerous drug and alcohol abuse that very easily could have taken his life at a number of different points. To go through all of that and be so positive and so full of life and have such an infectiously positive personality. I looked at that and I wanted to tell this story because you're right. There's never been a DVD to detail Zach's entire life from the beginning to where we are now. And so many people only know Zach from WWE and his match with Vince McMahon or being attacked by Brock Lesnar, or they know the internet reporting about his bad attitude or his drug use. And I want to put all that in proper perspective and fill in the whys and the whens and the wheres and the hows and show you this man's journey, which is really not just a journey of a pro wrestler, not just a journey of a cancer survivor, but a journey of a man who took 27 years to find himself. And that's where the title comes in, Finding Zach Gowen. It's a coming of age story. It's a roller coaster ride like no other that anybody can relate to, or if not relate to, at least sympathize with, empathize with, because he's been through so much and he's come out so strong. And I think it's a great, great life lesson for anybody in dealing with their own challenges in life.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what kind of drew me to it. I grew up near Santa Cruz, where surfing is very big, and one person who I think almost recently is also getting some, I guess the claim would be Bethany Hamilton. She's a one-armed surfer, for anyone that doesn't know. She lost it under very different circumstances, but clearly, you know, you hear stories like this, and you want to know these people, because I feel that you're drawn to the stories where someone, you know, maybe their life isn't perfect, and maybe that's some fault of their own, but when they pick themselves up, I think that's what's most drawing about it. And especially on the independent wrestling scene, I'm not saying there's not a lot of stories like that, but his is very unique. One thing I want to say, since you've traveled up and down with him, and you know, obviously you've seen him grow in the ring, you talked about, you know, there was some immaturity getting to one of the largest stages in wrestling there is. I mean, let's be honest, WWE is the biggest. Did you feel when you were trying to tell the story, looking back at maybe some things from his past, and you were putting this together, and it, right here in the description, it says it's 2 discs in 4 hours. I mean, how did you even know what to cut? I mean, how do you edit this? Because I would think that almost everything is important, because it's all a puzzle, and it builds to Zach Gowen.
It really does. And to be honest, this was a little bit easier to edit than my release last year, The Montreal Theory. And the reason was The Montreal Theory was just that. It was theory. It was speculation. It was just a lot of back and forth debate where you're looking for the story. And here with Finding Zach Gowen, we pretty much know the story. We know the big points of his career. It just comes down to how can we tell that as succinctly and impactfully as possible. And you mentioned there were a lot of things that we wanted to tell that maybe did not fit the overall main narrative of Zach's life. You know, we can't tell the story without talking about how WWE accidentally signs the wrong one-legged guy. We can't tell this story without talking about you know, a few of Zach's more depressing drug-fueled moments that maybe just didn't fit the timeline that we were trying to follow. Talking about the infamous story of Zach meeting Hulk Hogan as a youngster, and whether or not that was actually true. Things like that that maybe didn't fit the flow of the story, but are very much important, an important part of Zach's life that we made sure to put in our bonus features. You know, we had filmed, gosh, maybe 6 to 8 hours of footage just among Zach and the whole all-star cast. Rhino, Paul London, Jimmy Jacobs, Truth Martini, Jimmy Corderas, Brian Gorey, Gregory Iron. So many guys who have touched Zach's life and been a very important part of his life one way or another. Zach's mom, Zach's girlfriend, you know, so we have the personal touch as well. So we try to be as all-encompassing as possible to give people an impactful story that wouldn't drag and carry the full dramatic message and the message of inspiration that we want to, but also make sure we have that bonus disc there so all our bases are covered.
Yeah, and I mean, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, of course, bonus matches, including alternate commentary by Zach himself against Truth Martini. It's his first ever match, Nate Mattson, Christopher Daniels, Matt Cross teaming with him against Gargano, Josh Prohibition, and Nate Mattson. And then, of course, Zach Allen versus Gregory Iron. There's just a ton of stuff on this DVD. I'm looking forward to when it comes out. Of course, you can get it now, joe-dombrowski.com. Joe, I mean, you know, I don't want to take away from it, but I think this is something everyone should go check out the trailer. They got to see this for themselves before we can discuss it really any further. Not that there's any spoiler here or anything, but still. Speaking of one of the people on there, though, Jimmy Jacobs, you, as you said, you have quite a bit of stuff going on, and I think a lot of people probably also know you from Prime Wrestling. And you've just recently put out, it is now available on DVD and digital release, Jimmy Jacobs, I Beat the Odds and I Beat the Gods. There's a trailer available, of course. And this is, I am assuming all these matches are from Prime Wrestling, including matches against Gargano, Matt Cross, Gregory Iron, Lewis Linden, Facade, Bobby Beverly, and Aaron Draven, and more. Why now? Why is this now coming out? I realize that some people who are not aware, they can go to primewrestling.com, see some words that were put out there about the ending of that promotion. But I guess why now? Why would you put out something with Jimmy Jacobs specifically?
I think that there is so much in our 6-year film library of Prime Wrestling, formerly known as PWO. For those that don't know, we run semi-national television for 6 years. You know, we'd done internet pay-per-views. We had done a lot of things outside the box to what a lot of independent companies were doing at the time and still to this day. There's so much out there that I think fans that weren't watching us on television missed. Jimmy Jacobs had so many great matches. Johnny Gargano had so many great matches. And, you know, Gargano is one of the biggest stars in independent wrestling now, but I've known him and worked with him since he was 18. You know, Matt Cross, Zach Gowen, Zema Ion before he was Zema Ion, Madison Rain before she was Madison Rain, Ethan Carter III before he was Ethan Carter III. Not to mention the guests we've had in, Kevin Nash and Paul London and Rhino and Raven and Greg the Hammer Valentine. There's so much we did that I'm very proud of and I feel very strongly about the quality of, that I don't want Prime Wrestling to be swept under the rug just because we aren't running live events anymore. There still is so much content that, in my opinion, hasn't found its full, complete audience yet. There are thousands of Jimmy Jacobs fans that never watched our programming. And I would love to show them how Jimmy Jacobs came into Prime Wrestling and turned that whole place completely upside down. I would love to show the 1.5 million people watching Zema Ion every Thursday night, how Shima Zion and PWO was in some ways the beginning of the Zema Ion character. That's where it cut its teeth and had its really first opportunity on a television-based platform. And again, 6 years of my life, a lot of time, a lot of money, unfortunately, a lot of effort, a lot of man hours. And I'm very proud of that. And I want the world to see what we did. And that's why the Prime Cuts series is starting now. Volume 1 being Jimmy Jacobs. It was a good idea for a lot of reasons. Jimmy Jacobs is on TV every week. He's a very well-known name, well-known commodity. And the releases will keep coming from there. I'm not sure if it'll be every month or every 2 months, but there's at least a dozen of these I want to do that'll showcase the absolute best of what our company was able to do. And hopefully some old fans and some new fans will check it out.
As a completionist myself, when it comes to independent wrestling, it's just sometimes those DVDs I have to have. And, of course, even some promotions, well, some of them are now rerunning again, such as IWA Mid-South. But every once in a while, during a sale for, say, Smart Mark Video, I find myself going back and buying a DVD that I never have. And, of course, they're from 2002, 2004. They have really no ramification to now, but they're still really fun to watch. So hope
it's a great time capsule to look back and see what was going on, who was hot, who was coming up, who was coming down. And really, it's something you can look back on years later and remember, you know, because who knows where Johnny Gargano or Jimmy Jacobs is going to be in 5 to 10 years.
Right. I mean, and look at guys like Facade, Bobby Beverly, Lewis Linden, who I think either fortunately or however you see it, are just now kind of getting their names out there more regularly and people are beginning to notice. And there are little things that you can miss. And I think fans like myself, they want to see them. They want to see them in different environments. You know, you don't always want to see, not saying that you wouldn't, but a Bobby Beverly in AIW, you kind of wonder, well, what was he in another promotion? You know, how was he booked? Was it different? And I think you get a different look. So I'm glad to hear that you're going to be releasing more of these. Obviously, I would assume probably a Gargano, something like that, would be coming up soon. Are all of these going to be released still, though, through joe-dombrowski.com? Or, I mean, is Prime Wrestling still up and running?
PrimeWrestling.com still exists.
Yes, that was what I was asking. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the brand people know. And if somebody who used to watch us on television and maybe doesn't follow me in my current incarnation wants to check things out, I do want to keep that website up there. But in the past 6 months, I've been more focused on the brand of me, for lack of a better term, than the brand of Prime Wrestling. So both websites will be conducive for hosting the Prime Cut series.
All right. Well, of course, you can go to joe-dombrowski.com. Also, for I want to mention these just real quick. You have Refereeing 101 with Jimmy Corderas, and you mentioned the Montreal 32 products, I think, are also unique to yourself. I mean, just having Jimmy Corderas, having his insight. I mean, he's been a wrestling referee, very well known and very well spoken, I believe, on the podcast that he still hosts, and I enjoy his, you know, seeing his tweets. Is this something – are these little projects, are they still – I guess, are they still – encouraging, not maybe not encouraging is not the right word, but keeping your I guess your flame going in professional wrestling while you're still pursuing other avenues, you know, just doing projects like this, because I think it's fascinating. The cast of people you got on the Montreal Theory, just talking about it, such a historic moment. Are these little projects, do they keep you going?
Very much so. And depending on what they are, little may not be the most operative word based on a lot of the work that's gone into it. But I love it so much because I am completely my own boss and I'm completely in control of everything that's going on. Unlike Prime Wrestling, where I had various amounts of control here or there, but not always what was needed to accomplish certain things. Refereeing 101, Montreal, Zach Gowen on down the line. These are things that, you know, I'm able to have full creative control from day one up until the release and beyond, and market it my own way, sell it my own way, budget it my own way, do the trailer my own way, and have a great, very talented group of people behind the scenes to carry out my vision. Refereeing 101 was the first ever referee seminar done in the United States. Anyone who is interested in becoming a referee or is a referee that wants to get better, you absolutely have to have this. If you don't buy it, then that tells me that you don't feel your career is worth $20. So you should probably just stop. And I could go in a whole side rant about independent wrestlers that don't invest time or money in themselves, but that could be an hour-long podcast that we'll do some other time. And I mentioned Montreal Theory, which is just above and beyond sold far more than I thought would, and gotten so much more conversation and controversy than I thought would. And I've had people, very prominent people in the business, come up to me and say, there's no way Brett was in on Montreal. This is idiocy. Why would you peddle this stuff? Why would people buy this? And I've had equally credible people come up and say, you know what? Brett was absolutely on it. You're right. Here's why. It's amazing how polarizing this is, that you either firmly believe one thing, you firmly believe the opposite, or you don't even know what the heck to believe, but you're just intrigued like crazy about this story. And it's still going strong, and I practically sold out again at WrestleCon this year. Within the next month, I hope to have some Montreal Theory t-shirts available as well, so that's something else to watch out for.
Well, that is a lot of fun. And yeah, that is what I meant, little in terms of the overhead. I mean, because as far as I know, it's just you, and the scope is huge, obviously. You know, it is one of those things where people should be investing in themselves if this is going to be a career. And then, of course, the Montreal Theory, you kind of just threw it out there, Joe, in terms of this is one of the most polarizing events in wrestling history, if not the most. And you watch this. And then I do think it asks some questions that are poignant. And I know some people who've watched it, and they begin to question a little bit. You know, either they were staunchly in one camp, and then they're like, well, it is professional wrestling.
I think the most amazing thing about the Montreal Screwjob is that neither side of the story makes sense. You can go back and argue why Brett knew. You can argue why Brett didn't know. And either one... still, there's things fishy there, you know. I don't believe that Vince and Brett can have a conversation about that exact same finish a week before the show, and then Brett goes in naive. I don't believe that Brett can be a victim when he went to make more money than anybody else in pro wrestling history, and he ended up getting what he wanted because he never submitted and he never technically lost. You know, those questions keep coming, and those questions haven't been adequately answered, and I don't think they ever will. And for that, we should still ask questions, because again, this is a metaphor for life. You know, the Montreal Screwjob isn't a life or death situation for us, but you look at the government and the religious sects and Wall Street, and a lot of that could be. So ask questions and get information. Because absolutely. While Montreal is a little bit fun, there's a lot of not fun out there we should be asking questions about, too.
Absolutely. I mean, and one day we'll have Brian Kendrick on to discuss his views on that as well.
You know what? I would love to discuss conspiracy theories with Brian Kendrick. You know, I Paul London lived with me for 8 days last fall, and even Paul's admitted to me that, you know, Brian Kendrick takes things to another level than he does. So I would definitely love to experience that.
We'll have to try to put that on. Before we get out of here, Joe, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about Outsource Announcing. You can check all the details out, but tell us a little bit about it.
Outsource Announcing is my solution for independent wrestling, where you can have high-quality production and not have to pay a lot of money. So many independent companies cut corners, and they try to get a lot for a little, and sometimes they don't end up with a lot. But all the stuff we do practically is just out of the comfort of our homes. So you don't have to pay for transportation costs. You don't have to pay to ship equipment. I do voiceover commentary right here from my office at home. And we do graphic design. We'll design posters and DVD covers. We'll do some post-production editing. And actually, we're now with... some of the people I've hooked up with lately were also doing iPay-per-view. We can come to your event, and we can stream your event across the world on internet pay-per-view. So anybody that doesn't have an in-house production team or graphic design or whatever that is that you may be looking for, just search Outsource Announcing on Facebook, or just contact me directly, and we'll get you some rates, and we'll get you some business opportunities. You know, I've done work with ECWA out of Delaware, which is the longest running independent company in the world. I'm just started working with the union promotion up in Canada. And I've also talked to some pretty high profile people in wrestling whose names I won't give because we haven't come to terms yet. But somebody that everybody listening would know that's going to jump on the Outsource Announcing bandwagon later this year as well. So. I encourage anybody that wants to enhance the look of their promotion, or even if you're just a wrestler and you want a demo put together, come see us and we'll make you top notch, because the more you guys succeed, the more the industry as a whole succeeds. We all need to help each other, and stress the good and weed out the bad.
And Joe, if people that are listening are interested and want to contact you, how can they do that?
I am on Twitter at Joe_Dombrowski, Facebook.com/Joe Dombrowski Wrestling, YouTube.com. You can just search in Montreal Theory, finding Zach Gowen, whatever you may want to do, and you can find those trailers. Or you can also email me directly at joedombrowskipr@gmail.com. And I'll be happy to talk to anybody if you've got a question about a DVD or a business opportunity or just want to say hi. I'll be happy to respond. People that don't answer emails is a big pet peeve of mine. So as long as you don't ask me anything really stupid, I'll be more than happy to give you the time of day.
Sounds good, Joe. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, man. My pleasure. Keep on keeping on.
All right. I want to thank Joe for sitting down with me and talking to me about all of his new projects. I mean, Dez, I know, you know, you've had some interaction with Joe online. He has got tons of stuff like the Montreal Theory and the Zach Gowen documentary. He just released that Jimmy Jacobs Best of from Prime Wrestling. That man is just always busy. It's crazy.
I'll put it out there, man. Like, I know the Montreal Theory, there was like a mixed reaction to it. Personally, I loved it. Just because this is a guy who cares and is so passionate about the product he puts out there. And you can tell that from watching Prime and the way they tried to put their stories together and tell these stories. And also, it's really indicative of how Joe really cared about telling stories and putting all that stuff together. So I haven't seen the Zach Gowen DVD yet, but I can't imagine it being anything less than awesome just because Joe Dombrowski's there and Zach Gowen's got such an amazing story.
Yeah, I mean, he really cares about his product and, you know, everything that he talked about. Just really good things coming from him. And, of course, everyone can check out that information. It's going to be included in the info for the podcast, but you can also go to joe-dombrowski.com. for information on that. All right, so Dez, let's get into a little bit, last bit of news coming up. Global Force Wrestling is happening. It's it's the Jeff Jarrett project. They've had a lot of releases, two news releases, kind of giving us tidbits here and there leading up to this. Now we know it's happening. There's a connection, you know, to a big production company. One of the press releases, actually, it did mention they had 500 wrestlers in their database, and the Hollywood Reporter kind of, I think, misreported, you know, some people may say it was not, but I think they kind of worded that a little bit differently and made some people think that there were 500 wrestlers signed, and that's clearly not the case. But, yeah, you know, I'm kind of excited for this. I'm hoping that it happens. I'm hoping that it's, you know, it gets past these stages, and I think it will. Clearly, it has some momentum its way. What do you think? Do you think there's space for a number 4 or 3, I guess, wrestling promotion, depending on how you count it? I think there is, personally. I think there's enough talent. I think, obviously, where a lot of wrestling promotions go awry is in their financing. But what are your thoughts on this? Do you think this project could go as far as some are expecting it, or do you see it maybe not really getting off the ground?
I think there's always space for an extra promotion. I think it's all about the distribution of it. Where are you going to how are people going to get this? Is this going to be more of an online promotion, which I think we really need right now, is a promotion that can really take advantage of the evolving technology and really have an established presence exclusively online, and take advantage of these online distributors that are just desperate, craving content and media stuff. I think there's room right now for that, especially with that constantly changing landscape. There are a lot of unsigned wrestlers out there, and if not, I mean, there are some wrestlers that are signed to contracts, but I mean, they're not necessarily the best contracts, so they could probably end up in this Global Force thing. But yeah, this Hollywood Reporter thing was laughable at best. I gotta say,
Dez, they have 500 wrestlers signed. What's so funny about that?
500 wrestlers signed. Wow. WWE doesn't even have 500 wrestlers signed, do they?
No. I'm not even sure they have 200, but yeah, never know. All right, so let's get into some last bit of news here. PWG, they've been tweeting out information about their May 23rd show. They released a couple matches as of right now. I'm assuming they're going to be releasing more in the future. It is going to take place May 23rd. Kyle O'Reilly, he's going to take on Adam Cole in a submission or knockout only match for the PWG World title. It's kind of exciting.
Yeah.
And then Trevor Lee, Cedric Alexander, and Andrew Everett, they're returning after their what I would say was a very grand debut for them. They're taking on the Young Bucks and Kevin Steen. And then in another match, they've announced ACH versus Ricochet. So, Dez, I don't know if you're going to the show or not, but it's already – it's seemingly pretty stacked.
I'm going to make every effort I can to go to a show. PWG is always tough because it's a little pricey, but I'm going to do everything I can to be there and to watch somebody get knocked out or submitted.
Absolutely, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Expect to follow us on Twitter for all the live results from PWG. Dez, I'm gonna say that that's, I mean, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of news this past weekend, but obviously for the last 2 weeks, crazy. Lots of stuff.
Yeah.
We discussed this in the beginning. So why don't we get out of here? Why don't you tell listeners, though, what you're doing online and anything else you want to plug?
All right. So you can find my website. It's thingsdezsays.net. We've got podcasts that deal with the world of professional wrestling. We've also got stuff that does not deal with professional wrestling. I have a new set up that I taped a couple weeks ago in Burbank that you can watch right now on that website and on my YouTube channel. We've got the Ultimate Warrior tribute show that we did on Monday, which is just us kind of going back and looking at the career of the Warrior, both from like a fan perspective and also a little bit of an insider perspective. So that's up right now too. And then you can follow me on Twitter at Dez Delgadillo, and we can talk about whatever you want to talk about.
Awesome. And as always, we want to thank everyone for listening to us here at PWPonderings.com. Real quick, High Spots, our friends over there, they're having a $5 sale. I believe about 100 titles are on sale, so go check them out. If you can, use our banner link. They're on the right-hand side of our website. Help support us and allow us to continue doing what we do. I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about the fact that there is a Shine Eye pay-per-view on April 18th, main evented by Ivelisse defending her title against Saraya Knight, and then also 2CW. They're going to be live streaming an event Living on the Edge Line on April 18th for only $10, featuring AJ Styles versus Johnny Gargano, and Tajiri and Mikey Whipwreck versus AR Fox and Rich Swann, and then Kevin Steen versus Alex Shelley and more. So check that out. All that information will be on pwponderings.com, so you can just go there. As always, follow us on our social media, facebook.com/pwponderings and twitter.com/pwponderings. For Dez Delgadillo, my name is Chris Giusti. Thanks for listening. We'll be back again next week.